Are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Mayor.
Good. I hope you slept well last night. It feels like we just finished our last meeting, doesn't it?
It was brief, yes.
Good. And open signal, we're going to go ahead and start here. Good morning, everyone. This is the Wednesday, July 1st, 2020 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Carla. Could you please call the roll?
Good morning, Mayor. Hardesty.
Here.
Udaly. Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. This meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote social distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. And with that, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, members of council. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Finally, please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thanks, Robert. Next up is communications. Carla.
Mayor, we also will need to elect the new president of the council.
Ah, you are right. Look at that. It is July 1st. Who is next in the rotation?
It's Commissioner Udaly's turn.
One moment. I'm going to take a 30-second recess.
She's going to ask if you needed a motion.
I think we're going to elect Commissioner Udaly in her absence.
Hopefully she already knew.
Carla, I'd like to suspend the rules and not take this vote at this particular moment. I'd like to hold off for a few minutes. Could we please move to communications first?
Certainly. Item 512, request of Ben Prock regarding homeless camp located directly across from small business.
Can you hear me? This is Ben Prock.
Yes, we can.
Okay, I've got a prepared statement that I'll read from, if that's okay.
Go, Ben, go.
Yeah, that's
okay,
fine.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing me today. My name is Ben Prock, and I am a small business owner with an office located at 3051 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. We've been in business for about 25 years and weathered many economic turns and challenges over the years. Over a year ago, a homeless camp was erected within the Cloverleaf at 33rd and Northeast Columbia Boulevard, which is located directly across from my office. I assumed they'd likely move along after a month or that the city would likely move them out. When that didn't happen, I reported the unlawful campsite to the One Point of Contact website 1 year ago this month. Since then, I've reported the ever-growing campsite at least twice a month for the last year. The only action I've seen from the city is mowing the grass, which occurs around the camp. I've provided two or three photos for you to review. Over the past year, my employees and myself have witnessed the following types of activities: illegal burning of trash and trees, cutting down trees for use of firewood, open drug use, homeless relieving themselves in the open, homeless pleasuring themselves also in the open, obstructing traffic and yelling obscenities at cars, animal abuse. They have a sign up that says the dog bite. Open violent behavior. Just last week, I had to call the police department because they were hitting golf balls at my business. Theft, the environmental impact of the land that they are occupying, and I could go on. I am a law-abiding citizen that pays taxes and complies with the laws we are governed by. However, every day I witness illegal activities from the homeless camp across the street, which I've reported multiple times. However, no action is taken against them. I've also sent emails directly to the mayor's office, Multnomah County chair, the police chief, and several others in legislature pleading for my government to help resolve this matter. Our business has experienced drastically reduced revenues as a result of having this atrocity in such close proximity to our storefront. Customers simply don't want to deal with the negative aspects of walking by a homeless camp. The group living in the homeless camp has become more and more aggressive, and I now fear for the safety of my employees and myself. For the city to allow this lawlessness to continue for so long is absolutely wrong and a dereliction of the city's duties. I ask that you take immediate action to remove this camp and take measures to ensure it remains gone. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ben. And if I could just quickly respond, first of all, thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing the photos. And I want you to know that we are hearing you and we do understand your frustration. As you know, we have significant restrictions as to when, how, where, and under what circumstances we are able to remediate camps. We are under a consent decree, a settlement, if you will, that has a number of stipulations. On top of that, because of the COVID crisis, the Center for Disease Control basically issued guidance asking cities to stop camp remediation, which we have done for approximately the last 3 months. We are only now taking up the issue again of camp remediation. I will be the first to agree with you that the situation has actually exacerbated during the COVID crisis. We're aware of that. I am certainly aware of the impact that this has on livability in the community. But while we are under the guidance, the CDC guidance, it makes it very difficult for us to go about the ordinary camp remediation that we would do. We have received your emails and those have been forwarded to our urban camping folks who are aware of the situation. And we are now in the process of beginning to take up the question of camp remediation again. And that camp is definitely known to us. They are prioritized the cleanups in terms of public health threat, environmental threat, and immediate safety threat. And so that is the way we are working our way through the current requests that are in front of us. But I want you to know you are not being ignored. You are being heard, and your frustration is palpable and it is understood. So I want to thank you for being here today. And I will make sure that we reach out to you and keep you informed.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks, Ben. Next individual, please, Carla.
Item 513, request of Michaela Madrid to address council regarding defunding the Portland Police Bureau.
Good morning, Michaela.
Good morning, Portland City Council, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Michaela Madrid, and today I'm honored to bring forth the following statement from the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives PDX community group in solidarity with our Black and Afro-Indigenous relatives. Black lives matter. Black liberation and tribal sovereignty are inseparably linked to decolonization. Law enforcement institutions originated as slave patrols and state militias that enslaved Black people and committed genocide against Native Americans to colonize this country. This pervasive white supremacist foundation is perpetuated by our educational systems and uses policing and incarceration as a form of continued slavery and oppression. Anti-Blackness, anti-Indianness, and institutional racism keep BIPOC voices silent when public policy, procedures, and systems are created. White supremacy must be interrupted immediately by the City of Portland. We demand that funds from the Portland Police Bureau are allocated to BIPOC communities in order to create systems of restorative justice led by the Portland Black community, enhance the city's Black Male Achievement Program and create a Native American Achievement Program, heal the internalized white supremacy and trauma of police officers and city employees, and create accountability to ensure this training is utilized in everyday work, invite survivors of domestic violence, human trafficking, and sexual assault to reimagine the role police serve in our community. Increase the Portland Children's Levy funding to culturally specific organizations and create inclusive institutional processes that recognize community needs evolve over time. We stand in solidarity with the demands from the Portland African American Leadership Forum, Unite Oregon, and Don't Shoot PDX. We thank you for the budget allocation to the city's tribal relations program, but also recognize that not all demands were met at the final budget approval. We will continue to hold you accountable to act on these vital needs and look forward to your demonstrated compassion. In closing, it's time for police to serve and protect all communities, rather than be given liberty and immunity to harm BIPOC communities. We need survivor-centered, trauma-informed, and healing-focused services to create a community of care instead of a police force. It is time for a new system that honors and nurtures the dreams of a caring and vibrant world. A world where Black and Afro-Indigenous children and their children's children can stand tall in the fullness of their dreams. This cannot happen until Black lives matter to our institutions in Portland. In solidarity, MMIW PDX. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Michaela. Appreciate your remarks this morning. Thank you for being here. So Carla, that completes communications, is that correct?
Correct, that's the only two we had this morning.
All right, I have a small announcement I need to make before we move into our time certain. It's actually two announcements. I'll make one here at the beginning and then I'll make one at the end. Colleagues, before we begin today's time certain items, I need to provide an update on the residential infill project. We'd originally scheduled to vote on the amendments on July 1st today at 2 p.m. Due to the absence of Commissioner Udaly, we will continue the item until July 9th at 2 p.m. and we will vote on the proposed amendments at that time. To the members of the public who are planning on watching the vote, thank you for your engagement and patience. And then I will make a subsequent announcement at the end. All right, first time certain item. There's actually two items that we're going to read together, Carla, 514 and 515, please.
514, authorize a letter of agreement between the City of Portland and the Portland Police Association to extend the collective bargaining agreement between the parties for 1 year to allow public participation in the bargaining process, which has been impacted by COVID-19, and 515, ratify a successor collective bargaining agreement between the City and the Portland Police Association relating to the terms and conditions of employment of represented employees at the Bureau of Emergency Communications for 2019-2023.
Thank you, colleagues. The next two items concern the city's labor agreements with Portland Police Association officers and represented employees at the Bureau of Emergency Communications. They have obviously been read together. As police commissioner, I'll offer introductory remarks about the PPA officer contract item 14. As commissioner in charge of BOIC, Commissioner Hardesty will then offer remarks about the PPA BOIC contract, which is item number 515. The city's agreement with the PPA to extend the officer contract by 1 year accomplishes two primary objectives. First, we will allow time for the legislative changes, such as those that passed last week in the special session that we can then deal with and bargain. One key legislative change that occurred last week is passage of the arbitration bill that limits an arbitrator's authority in disciplinary matters if the parties have collectively bargained a discipline matrix or guide. The city has tried for the past 2.5 years to get this bill passed, and I'm very happy that it was one of the pieces of police reform from last week's session that we can now incorporate into our bargaining process. Second, we were more than halfway through the bargaining and would likely only have had a couple of more public sessions before coming to the end, which would not have allowed for sufficient public participation, something that we pledged at the beginning of this process. With this agreement, we restart bargaining on January 13th, 2021, and we'll have at least 150 days of bargaining and therefore much greater opportunity for necessary public participation. I'd like to thank the city's bargaining team and the Portland Police Association for working together to come to this agreement expeditiously. I support this agreement and I ask my colleagues to join me. I'll now give Commissioner Hardesty an opportunity to offer remarks about the PPA BOIC contract. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I also want to add my appreciation and thanks to the city's bargaining unit and team. It is clear that it was a devastating vote for me to have to vote against the BOIC contract when it came up previously. Due to the city's financial situation, it was clear that we had an expectation that that all of us would share the pain and the gain as we move through this COVID-19 crisis. I want to do a special shout out to Bob, who has shown just exceptional leadership as the director, Bob Casa, as the director of BOAC. Over the last few years, and I just appreciate him more and more as we move through some very challenging times. The union leadership team excelled in working collectively with the city's bargaining team to come up with this agreement, and I know it was hard for all sides, but I'm really appreciative that we were able to do that. And last but certainly not least, I want to really appreciate the hard work of our 911 call center employees. They are second to none in the city of Portland, and they work under the most trying circumstances. So I hope today you will support this contract so that our employees at BOAC will have some certainty in a very uncertain future. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, team, for bringing this these resolutions forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. We'll now hear from Kathy Bless, the director for the Bureau of Human Resources. Heidi Brown is here from the city attorney's office to answer any legal questions. Obviously, Kathy can answer any HR questions. Then we'll open the floor to public testimony. I don't know if you had further presentation or just were making yourselves available for Q&A.
I just have just a bit of recap and comment. I'll be brief and then we can go right into public comment. So thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Again, I am Kathy Bless, Chief Human Resource Officer. I'm here today to seek your approval of items 514 and 515. I will speak to both of these items briefly. So item 514 seeks a one-year extension of the Portland Police Association contract through June 30, 2021. With this contract extension, the PPA has agreed to defer its cost of living adjustment for fiscal year 2021, representing a savings of about $3 million. The union has also agreed to an expanded Portland Street Response pilot, providing for 6 units, and has agreed to public participation in the bargaining process, as you mentioned, beginning January 13th of 2021. Assuming, of course, that it will be safe to do so as the nation continues to deal with the COVID-19 crisis. It is also important to note that under collective bargaining rules, when a contract expires without a new agreement, most terms and conditions of employment continue under the requirement to maintain the status quo. Allowing the expiration of a collective bargaining agreement does not provide the city with a new opportunity to act independent of the expired contract. Extending this contract does help to ensure critical conversations on police accountability within the state, federal, and local levels are integrated within this timeline. I would like to take this moment to thank Union President Daryl Turner, Chief Lavelle, former Chief Resch, and Deputy Chief Chris Davis for their leadership and collaboration during these negotiations. I would also like to thank the labor relations team within BHR for their continued work, Budget Director Jessica Kennard and her staff, and both Heidi Brown from the City Attorney's Office. I also want to acknowledge the work and input from Carly Edwards, who is Chief of Staff to Commissioner Hardesty, and as well as Jamal Fox, Nicole Grant, and Sonia Schmansky from your office. All have worked in support of getting to this moment, and I fully support this contract extension and ask Council to approve this ordinance. So now I'll move to item 515, seeking your approval of the PPA 911 operators contract. The city began negotiations in January of 2019 with AFSCME, and 2 months into that process, the union members elected to change their representation to the Portland Police Association. We resumed bargaining with the PPA in late June 2019, and in December went to mediation. Through good faith bargaining, we reached a tentative agreement on March 11th, and it was ratified by their union shortly thereafter. The previous BOEC agreement expired in June of 2019, and after additional negotiations due to COVID-19 and the forecasted economic impacts to the city, both parties have agreed to additional concessions. This contract provides for a 1% increase across the board and longevity pay at year 7 to ensure we remain competitive with similar jurisdictions in our local area. We increased the ability for dispatchers to attend training, and the city was successful in negotiation about accountability and sick leave use. The additional concessions negotiated within this contract with the PPA provides for deferring the longevity pay in fiscal year 2021, deferring the cost of living adjustment for this current fiscal year as we enter into July 1st, and a partial deferral of the COLA that they're giving up this fiscal year into the following fiscal year. This contract adds a 4th year and provides an additional 1% across the board in fiscal year 22-23. The savings represents over $500,000, which is significant for a small labor group. I would like to take this moment and thank again Union President Daryl Turner and Director Bob Causey for their leadership and collaboration during these negotiations. And I would also like to thank City Attorney Lori Kraut, as well as the staffs from Commissioner Hardesty and your office as well. Thank you so much for the thoughtful consideration of these agreements. Both the union and the city worked hard on these contracts. I fully support this agreement as well and ask that you approve this contract. I am now available for any questions, as is Lori Kraut, who did the work for the 911 contract, and Heidi Brown for the PPA police officer contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Heidi, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Mayor, I don't have specific comments, but I'm absolutely available if there are questions or if there's any sort of clarification that would be helpful to provide.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions before we move to public testimony? Very good. I think we're all pretty well versed on both of these at this point. with that, Carla, how many people do we have signed up for public testimony this morning?
For both of these, we have about 9 people, I believe.
Very good. I don't see any reason why we can't take 3 minutes for each if people could just state their name for the record.
Okay. The first one is Hong Nam.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you all hear me?
Loud and clear.
Great. Thank you. First of all, I want to just thank City Council for committing to a public process for the contract. I think that's really important. And I think that since the negotiations are supposed to begin in January, I would, and with all the increased interest and concerns about policing, I would really like to see additional public virtual forums to get more input about what we want in the contract at this point, because I think it's really changed since we did this last year. First of all, my name is Hyung Nam. I'm representing Portland Metro People's Coalition. I'm a public school teacher with PPS and a union member. And also I've served as a official budget advisory committee member for the Portland Police Bureau recently. And I just wanna say, first of all, I wanna underscore the contract letter that many of our organizations signed on to, calling for some very specific changes to the police contract. And that is especially with dealing with racism and lack of accountability around use of force, and having independent, true independent review with ability to compel testimony, and eliminating the special privileges that police officers have around this process. And I want to just underscore that the Police Bureau's own internal study, the Strategic Insight Survey, shows that there's a huge problem with lack of trust for the police. They call themselves public safety, but if the majority of the public, especially BIPOC communities, do not trust the police, they can't pretend to be a public safety department. And I just want to also underscore that, you know, while the content of the contract is extremely important, there are a lot of other things outside the contract that I would like, especially Mayor Wheeler as Commissioner of Police, to do. We've been seeing nightly brutality against protesters. Last night was one of the worst cases that we've seen. And if you pay attention to those sequences of how things happen, you will see that it is the police that incite violence, that incite protesters nightly. And they are violating the rights of not only the protesters, but of the public, of journalists and medics, attacking them with CS gas, even though it's supposed to be banned. This is going into people's homes, into people that are just driving by, into their cars. This could cause traffic accidents. It could cause major health problems during this pandemic. This is a threat to public safety. We're wasting taxpayer dollars with these police officers that are threatening police safety. And I know that there ACLU recently pointed out issues with the Directive 635.10 on crowd management and crowd control. This has also been pointed out by the auditor after the June 4th, 2017 protests, where we've seen some huge problems when they kettled 400 people in a whole block, including journalists, took photos of their ID, and there were all kinds of recommendations made there by the IPR and the audit.
That's 3 minutes.
All right, and folks, just thank you for that, Hyung, and we appreciate you serving on the Budget Advisory Committee. Thank you for that as well. This testimony today is narrowly focused on the question of the contracts that are before us. There will clearly be plenty of opportunity in the days, the weeks, and the months ahead to discuss use of force tactics and what's going on the streets today. I would argue we need more transparency in terms of what is going on, what the police bureau is doing, and why the police bureau is doing what they are doing. And I've had conversations just this morning with people to ensure that we double down on those efforts to make sure we are being completely transparent and accountable in our use of force tactics and why things are done and how these issues unfold. So let's take that up separately. Today, we are narrowly focused on the two ordinances before us. Thank you. Next individual, please, Carla.
Is John.
John, just John.
There's no last name listed.
All right, John, you're up.
Hi, I wanted to ask why the Portland police contract union contract is being extended for a year when they've been on the record saying that if it were allowed to expire, it would go into a status quo period where a new contract could be adopted at any time. So I'm wondering why not start the public engagement process immediately on a new contract and have it adopted immediately rather than waiting a whole year to start that process?
Yeah, John, that's a fair question, and it's one that we actually considered, and I'll give my best answer, and then maybe Kathy or Heidi or one of my colleagues have a different response. I actually was concerned that January was too late. When we started this process, I thought, wow, we're going to push this all the way to January. That seems like a long time to delay. But now that I've seen how the COVID crisis is unfolding, I'm actually concerned that January may be too soon. The bottom line is we want to get going as quickly as we can to have the full community engagement process that we pledged right up front when we started this process and we held our community listening sessions. One of the top values that was almost universally agreed to was more public participation in the process. And we just cannot do it under COVID with the restrictions that we have. So that was the first consideration. The second was we wanted to wait and see how the legislative process unfolded. We believed that we had an opportunity to finally see some of the legislation that we were putting forward and supporting as a city council that had been put forward by the People of Color Coalition in the state legislature. Waiting has proven to be, I think, a net positive for us now that we have seen that legislation that we've advocated for finally pass. So those are the two main reasons that I would give you. John, it looks like Commissioner Hardesty maybe wants to give you a slightly different perspective. Commissioner Hardesty.
I know, Mayor, I don't want to disagree with anything you said. I would think for me also, we understand that the People of Color Caucus are preparing for a second special session that will have some additional police reform measures that we anticipate will pass that session, hopefully. And what that means is when the city starts renegotiating in January, the city will be in a much better position than we started the negotiations when we started this term. And we'll say more about that as we make remarks today. But for me, it's really important that we continue to engage the community around the kind of community policing they want. And this gives us some more flexibility and opportunities to really be focused on the changes we can make, assuming that Salem does the job that we expect them to continue to do. And I appreciate the question, John.
Yeah, thank you. And John, thank you for your continued engagement. I know that you participated in early community sessions and you've been involved in this from the beginning. So thanks to you and have a great weekend with your daughter.
Thank you.
Next is Edith Gillis.
Hi, Edith.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning. Twice in less than 12 hours. We feel privileged. It's good to hear your voice.
I'm saying I like us to keep item 515 as is for the Bureau of Emergency Communications versus the Portland Public Police Bureau. And for 514, I want us to change item number 2 to read it, change the wording so that it says any and all cost of living adjustment for fiscal year 2020 to 2021 shall be denied, and that any and all future COLA shall be dependent upon the city meeting the following criteria. The city shall have enough money and resources, staffing, and adequate policies to first meet the requirements to protect and serve all Portlanders' safety, health, democracy, and social justice via 1. Climate mitigation with net zero carbon by 2025. 2. Disaster prevention and resilience for all Portlanders. 3. Pandemic prevention and reduction, compensation, and just recovery from public, now my eyesight's going black and I can't see.
Edith, are you all right?
No, I'm having medical problems, sorry. 4, removal of all dangerous fossil fuel infrastructure, transport, storage, and use by 2025. 5, yearly improve and expand the green infrastructure, biodiversity, regenerative nature. 6, local organic growing and producing of all the food Portlanders would need, with food security, safe drinking water, conserve purple water, and safe reuse of gray water. 7, the local growing and production of medical and personal protective equipment needed in case of pandemic and local regional disasters in which regional, state, and federal resources.
Edith, could I ask, are you recommending that we amend the police contract to address our climate mitigation concerns?
I'm saying that for number 2, the criteria for continuing is based on the city meeting its priorities and public safety and health first. And then in section number 3, when they say when to continue it, it would be not dependent upon the federal government giving monies for militarized police or police state, but that the, because it's very conceivable the federal government could withhold all other funding and then have mandated, unfunded mandates requiring the city to spend lots of money while creating lots of disasters so that we won't have the money and means to give COLA. And if we give COLA, it would be unfair to give it just to one and not all the others that you need more for society, for the city fulfill its requirements. And number 8, as a criteria under number 2 for COLA, secure accounting and transparent democracy in which each and every Portlander 18 and older can vote and have votes properly counted for any and all Portland ordinances, budgets, items, measures, and candidates, regardless of national citizenship or former incarceration, etc. Number 9, adequately house every Portlander. 10, social justice, including reparations, especially for QD BIPOC. And by that, I mean queer, trans, Black, Indigenous, as well as immigrant people of color. And 11, crime prevention via healthy and safe 24/7 parks and recreation and ongoing education, so that we are teaching and nurturing multicultural, anti-racist, and all gender welcoming, neurodiversity, all abilities, so that we are countering the hate crimes and the injustice that we have systemically encouraged in the police department escalates. Number 12, a healthy and just transition from fare free public transit with housing, education services, and food properly located.
All right. Thank you, Edith. Appreciate it. And I hope you're feeling all right. Are you doing okay?
No.
You need some help?
I need lots of medical support. But right now, I didn't even think I could get through this, so I'm glad I could at least get that.
All right. I just want to make sure you're doing all right.
I'm not, but thank you.
All right. Well, we appreciate your participation today, and thanks for being with us late last night as well. Next individual, Carla.
Is Dan Handelman.
Mr. Handelman, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. Cop Watch understands that circumstances surrounding the pandemic have led to the now hasty renewal of the PPA collective bargaining contract. In general, we also understand that meeting the community's demands to defund and rethink the purpose of police in society has added an extra layer of complexity to the negotiating process. In that sense, the one-year renewal you are considering today buys some time to reimagine what can be done to minimize community harm while protecting the rights of officers to earnings and benefits. Clearly, the opportunity to expand the Portland street responses as an alternative to police responding to houseless persons and mental health crises is one step toward reducing our city's overdependence on police. However, this agreement also signals the possibility that Mayor Wheeler will never have to go through the hard, tough negotiations to remove the barriers to accountability baked into the contract. After winning the May primary in 2016, the mayor cheered that on then-Mayor Charlie Hales from the sidelines as Hales negotiated a contract which nominally removed the 48-hour rule but left the other barriers in place. The adoption of that contract was done with council meeting in the Rose Room while Joanne Hardesty and I were among those locked in city council chambers. If Mayor Wheeler is not reelected, his opponent will be negotiating the 2021 contract. Copwatch has been among the community groups demanding that the contract be changed to allow IPR to investigate deadly force cases, which is currently prohibited. That agency also needs to be able to compel officers to testify and not be required to interview officers in police facilities, which are issues limited by the current contract. The community letter we signed also called for drug testing of officers after deadly force incidents, which is not allowed now. This delay means we have to live for another full year with all of these limitations in place, among others. Some changes have to be made in the contract, some to state law, and some to city law. For example, the community demand for the city to fire officers more easily needs to be addressed. The bill which just passed in the legislature was incorrectly characterized by Governor Brown over the weekend as limiting arbitrators' ability to overturn discipline of officers. The bill only applies to situations where arbitrators agree that misconduct occurred, though it does limit their ability to lower the amount of proposed discipline. Further steps must be taken to limit the arbitrator's ability when considering whether misconduct occurs in serious cases. It also means various side agreements to the contract, including provisions of the discipline matrix, are also on hold for a year. Even PPA President Daryl Turner admitted the matrix needs to be revisited in the context of the sergeant whose maximum punishment for making an openly racist remark at roll call was 3 weeks off without pay. In terms of the transparency, which has been unprecedented until today's agreement was announced, it's clear negotiations took place to put this contract together. The last known negotiating session held at PPA headquarters March 13 was reportedly used to finalize ground rules. Those rules include that every other meeting be held in public. The contract was signed on June 8, about 2 weeks into the uprisings after the murder of George Floyd. While city officials hinted they were thinking about extending the contract in various public forums, nobody was told about the sessions held to create this tentative agreement. We hope the extra time will be used to facilitate more and deeper community dialogues about changes needed to next year's contract. We appreciate that council is making some efforts to meet community demands on holding police accountable, but we also remember the slogan that justice delayed is justice denied, and we sent you a longer version of that testimony by email yesterday.
Thank you, Dan. Always appreciate it.
Next is Jennifer Shasheri.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me. My name is Jennifer Perot, and I appreciate this opportunity. I own two small food businesses in Northeast Portland. I am here representing myself, but also 15 other influential restaurants with whom I've been regularly meeting in the last month on how to engage more actively in city politics. We feel that our progressive views, including police defunding and accountability, are not represented by the legacy Chamber of Commerce. In fact, we understand that the Portland Business Alliance has far too much influence in this room and is too often acted as a political arm of Portland's 1%. In the week after our first meeting, we circulated a change.org petition titled Portland Small Business Owners Demand Mayor Ted Wheeler Defund Police, Portland Police Bureau. As of this morning, it has 4,500 signatures. It has been submitted to the mayor's office and we've yet to hear a response. I can say that as someone with race and class privilege, the vast majority of my interactions with the police come in the context of my role as a business owner. I am too often left with 911 as the only resource when a community member is in crisis. So given my fears for the individual from police violence, I generally do not call. I submit that there are better ways to spend our tax dollars generated by the millions in revenue from our collective businesses. We want actual resources and care for our fellow city dwellers. All this is to say, I personally hesitate to support the 2016 police contract and its extension. It seems that it's pretty clear how the public feels about these issues. Thanks to the work of our Black leaders and other organizations working on this issue for years, Portlanders are newly aware of how weak the oversight process is and how misaligned with our values the police union is. I worry that the council is hoping the public's engagement on this issue will fade, but I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to these members. I do want to say I am a strong supporter of unions and believe in every worker's right to unionize, but unions are meant to protect and support the working class and underprivileged. The PPA is not this. They routinely align with the priorities of the ruling class of corporations and right-wing politicians. Their PAC donates money against leaders who champion police oversight. I would in fact argue that given their armed status and qualified immunity, they can hardly be considered working class. The community deserves true accountability and transparency, and the PPA stands in its way time and time again. Myself and my small business peers are following this issue closely, and we will be vocal in our views. Portland has much work to do. I appreciate that this council is under tremendous pressure, and I echo Dan's slogan, justice delayed is justice denied. I also echo Portland Jobs with Justice in calling for Portland City Council and the PPPA to ensure that this contract negotiation process is absolute and seeks citizen feedback along the way. And if I have a minute left, as restaurant owners, we are struggling to keep the lights on, and recent reports on tens of thousands of dollars spent on tear gas in the midst of a pandemic is highly insulting. Some of this very gas was used on my family, including my teenage son, on June 5th, as we stood with our hands up singing happy birthday to Breonna Taylor. In the last month, I've witnessed over and over again how police escalate the tensions. I've never seen any attempts by the Bureau to de-escalate.
That's 3 minutes.
In a time of austerity, my furloughed family face eviction and food insecurity, and their children's teacher salaries are slashed. The police bureau does not seem expected to share in this burden. I can only hope this additional year gives you the time to muster the strength needed to create real and equitable change.
Thank you. Appreciate the time. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Jennifer, for your testimony this morning. Thank you for working with restaurant owners. We know how restaurant owners, especially, are really suffering through this pandemic. And so I just want you to know how much I appreciate you being activated and being involved in this issue. I want to assure you that the Portland Business Alliance is not the boss of me, and that I am absolutely committed to making sure that we continue having a public process that actually centers the values of how the community wants to be policed. I'm excited about this opportunity that we have with this delay, quite frankly, to continue to reimagine what community safety looks like so that we go into January's negotiation with a much clearer picture of how we start building the kind of community safety force that we want. I am not happy at all when I see the video of what's been happening on the streets every night. And that cannot continue. So we have to figure out how to resolve that as soon as possible. But I did not want you to leave here thinking that, and I can tell you, none of my colleagues are being bossed around by the Portland Business Alliance either. The reality is that we have to solve many of the crises that we're in right now. And this extension in no way backs us away from our commitment to ensuring that the contract clearly represents the community's values. We've got a way to go with that. There are legal hurdles to getting where we want to go, but we are going to bring the community along every step of the way. So Jennifer, I hope your son is okay and all the other people who continue to be exposed to gas every night. I just can't imagine what the health impacts will be of that over the long term.
So much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Go ahead, Carla.
I'm sorry. Next is Maria Cahill.
Hi, Maria.
Hello. My name is Maria Cahill. I volunteer to organize with Pacific Northwest Family Circle. This is a group of families in the Pacific Northwest whose loved ones have been killed by police and have chosen to struggle for justice together. Today, I speak on behalf of myself based on experience working directly with these families. Last year, many of the Portland families and myself and other supporters attended the community engagement events hosted by Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty. The top two issues most important to the community were accountability and transparency, Yet City Council opted instead to negotiate in private with police, giving them raises and making other unacceptable concessions that will preserve the status quo. And the status quo is this. Over 170 people of all races have been murdered by police in Portland since 1992. Not one officer has been punished or stayed punished. Without an accountable and transparent process around union contract negotiations, the number of community members murdered by police in Portland will continue to rise, and the number of officers punished will continue to stay at zero. I just want to be clear that I support the positions and testimony of Portland Cop Watch on this issue. The families of Pacific Northwest Family Circle who suffer daily over this incredible violation of trust cannot be calmed with this delay. There is no excuse that you can offer them for delaying accountable and transparent practices in your processes. So I'm just going to take a moment to say the names of the loved ones in our organization. And I invite everyone at this meeting to join me in a practice taught to us by Black Lives Matter Portland at the monthly Keaton Otis Vigil. After I read each name, I invite you to join me in saying, "We remember you," for all the loved ones who were killed by police, and to say, "We support you," for all the loved ones who were injured by police. This is just a fraction of the loved ones killed by police who unwillingly gave their lives to this justice struggle and should be whose names and pictures should be in your mind and in the room every time you work on police contract negotiations. 19-year-old Christopher Kalanji, we remember you. 22-year-old Bodie Phelps, we remember you. 25-year-old Chance Thompson, we remember you. 17-year-old Quanis Hayes, we remember you. 24-year-old Terrell Johnson, we remember you. 27-year-old Chase Hammer, we remember you. 21-year-old Bradley Morgan, we remember you. 27-year-old Daniel Isaac Covarrubias, we remember you. 29-year-old Alex Stold, we remember you. 49-year-old Captain Brian Babb, we remember you. 44-year-old Dino Case, we remember you. 54-year-old Remy Sabi, we remember you. 48-year-old John Elifritz, we remember you.
That's 3 minutes.
43-year-old Jesse Powell, we remember you. 27-year-old Patrick Kimmins, we remember you. 35-year-old Matthew Burrows, we remember you. 36-year-old Andre Gladden, we remember you. 20-year-old Giovan Joseph McDade, we remember you. 29-year-old Joel Nelson, we remember you. Alive, Andre Thompson, we support you. Alive, Bryson Chaplin, we support you.
Maria, I just want to thank you for the incredible work that you and the Northwest Family Circle does to really embrace families at the time in their life. I really appreciate that regularly and that you continue to ensure that you're part of making sure that the Keaton Otis Vigil continues. It is still the longest continuous monthly vigil in the country for someone who's been killed by police violence. I disagree with some of your premise, but I hope by the end of this conversation today that you'll have additional information about our commitment to ensuring that not just a contract, but every part of community safety is reevaluated and refocused on ensuring that all our community members can feel safe from both police violence and other violence. So thank you again for being here. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next is Seemob Hussaini.
Welcome.
Hello, everybody. Greetings, Carla and Commissioners Hardesty, Mayor and Police Commissioner Wheeler. Well wishes to Commissioner Udaly and Fritz. My name is Seemob Hussaini with the Oregon Chapter for the Council on American Islamic Relations and Coalition member of Portland United Against Hate. In consideration of the commission to authorize a letter of agreement between the City of Portland and the Portland Police Association to extend the collective bargaining agreement, I want to start with the fact that we're excited for the Portland Street Response Pilot Program to proceed with up to six teams in the city and not be limited to just the Lentz neighborhood. We also understand that the emergency closures due to the public health crisis resulted in an unprecedented impact on the city's financial standing. So to help with this, may I offer the consideration to save a ton of money by switching your auto insurance, to save a ton of money by stopping all Portland Police Bureau LEs from inciting riots immediately. Now, I understand that this sounds facetious, but ask the reporters that have been gassed nightly and even arrested for simply being press. These are concrete suggestions which will save millions in the next 6 months, such as end all purchases and use of tear gas, maybe even non-lethal munitions. Mayor Wheeler, you've been dubbed Tear Gas Ted, War Crimes Wheeler. As even in warfare, as with all other chemical weapons, CS and all the gas you're using has been banned. This will help allow the city, quote, to allow the city to the greatest extent possible to meet its financial obligations while retaining employees and maintain delivery of city services. And I also ask that you release all arrested press and media that was detained last night, dismiss all the charges, fight to reverse a tarnishing reputation the police commissioner and the mayor is receiving. I think it is repairable. I also thank Commissioner Hardestine acknowledging the nightly videos and the long-term health impacts of these attacks upon the people of Portland. Transparency isn't a choice, Mayor. You're ignoring frontline live reporting. You have work to do, and if you pass this collective bargaining off till after the election cycle, we will remind you consistently of what you can and aren't doing in the meantime and in place of. Thank you.
Thank you for your perspective. We appreciate it.
Next is Sarah Ayanna Rome.
Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. Special thanks to Maria Cahill for reading those names. I know that's why we're all here today. And I know that we all unequivocally support unions and workers' rights to organize. However, I disagree with the hasty renewal of the Portland Police Association collective bargaining contract. While COVID does present challenges, with tens of thousands of Portlanders in the streets supporting and demanding reform, we're missing a valuable opportunity to leverage that public support for bringing maximum demands to the bargaining table. I stand in alignment with the demands of many community groups outlined in the letter already referenced here, who want to see the contract changed to allow an independent civilian agency to investigate deadly force cases, to compel officers to testify and not be required to interview officers in police facilities, and for drug testing of officers after deadly force incidents. I hear Commissioner Hardesty has proposed creation of a new police oversight system enshrined in the city charter and independent from any elective office or city bureau for the November ballot. That's exciting. I look forward to a robust public process around that effort and good progress on that front. While this delay means we have to live with the limitations of the current contract in place, as Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch pointed out, there is an upside. The one-year renewal under consideration today means that Portlanders have an opportunity in November to vote out Ted Wheeler and elect a mayor they actually trust to lead on police reform in January 2021. In my Rethinking Public Safety plan, which people can find at sarah2020.com/public safety, I propose including a residency requirement for Portland police. In Boston, candidates must reside in the city for at least a year before applying to the department and then maintain residency while employed. I can't help but wonder if the illegal violence I'm witnessing against the public, against journalists, against members of the press, might not be mitigated if the people charged with public safety actually considered the people in the streets their neighbors instead of enemy combatants, which is what I'm seeing night after night in recent weeks. Would police be as willing to tear gas their own neighborhoods? I doubt it. You're clearly aware that last night they again deployed tear gas, Mayor Wheeler. Did you see that Portland police arrested journalists again last night too? It's illegal. I hope you'll take action to stop this violence and immediately hold accountable the officers perpetrating it. Not only is it a public health menace, you're opening the city to lawsuits that the next mayor will be dealing with for years. We must be proactive to truly hold police accountable in this moment. Police brutality is not an acceptable response to protests about police brutality. I've been actively testifying in Salem regarding the recent suite of reforms, but I find it frustrating that the state points to the cities point to the state, and everyone points to Trump. Ultimately, the buck stops with the police commissioner. You need to take responsibility and action for reining in these rioting officers. They are out of control. Finally, in terms of the transparency, it's not enough to announce a transparent process. We need to carry it out always. The decision to extend the contract was made behind closed doors without public input.
That's 3 minutes.
The city can't figure out how to hold virtual meetings to facilitate the bar. Okay, thank you.
Next is Emery Mort.
Thanks. And Commissioner Hardesty, I assume you do not have your hand raised. Is that just from last time?
Sorry, Mayor, it's from last time.
No worries. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right. My name is Emery Mort, for the record. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, Commissioners Hardesty, Commissioner Udaly, and Fritz, and other city officials listening today. And thank you. I want to definitely reiterate Portland Cop Watch's testimony and so much other powerful testimony here today. As most of the commissioners know, I've been participating in this PPA contract process from the beginning, just trying to be a good community member and help community demands be addressed in what is, I think we would all agree, this PPA contract process is a pretty lengthy, difficult, very seemingly intentionally kind of complicated process. You know, I was on a call, Representative Bynum was talking last night about how this system is created to be this complicated intentionally and to be this sort of hard to move intentionally. And so, you know, I just wanted to touch on a couple things. I think everyone else has covered some of our issues pretty well, but I'll just start with during this PPA contract process, this round, we in the community who have been active on this, we've heard from city council or connections that we have a couple of times that, hey, actually, you know, the community doesn't care about these PPA contract things that much. And so we on the outside have been forced to reiterate to your offices and other city bureaus that actually, yes, we do care. The community does care about transparency. And I just want to say with the whole George Floyd thing, can we put that issue, can we put that talking point to rest? And on that topic, you know, we on the outside really need everyone in City Hall to step up and help in this wild goose chase that we're put on. We're told to go on this wild goose chase in order to get transparency and accountability. So as others have mentioned, we're told to go to the state. We're told, oh, this can't be done this way. You have to get it in the contract. And then, oh, it can't be in the contract. That's in how the police management, who's not in the contract, how they do things. And so I would like to say, you know, Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fritz, city attorneys, Bureau of Human Resources, all of you have more inside information and access. So please, you've made commitments to do this. So please follow through in helping address whatever can be addressed. So for example, police management can change some policies, force them to do so. Be as knowledgeable as you can to help this process go along.
That's 3 minutes.
Okay, last point on transparency. It would be great if we could hear, how did you negotiate this agreement without a public session per the ground rules that we had kind of understood? So we have worked on this. We'd love to hear, how did you negotiate that? Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty, you're muted.
I wanted to just give a couple of comments based on Emery's testimony. Emery, I have been following police contracts in the city of Portland for almost 30 years. I can tell you that this is the very first time, to my knowledge, in the history of the city of Portland, that the entire city council actually took a position on how we would negotiate this contract. The entire city council voted to support an outside attorney being the lead. The entire city council is committed to making sure that this new contract is a lot different than the old contracts. You may have learned in some of the meetings that you've been in, there's a lot of things in the police contract that no one who's alive today remembers how it got in there, but it is in there. And it's not an easy process to take things out of a contract that have been negotiated by somebody else somewhere down the road. I want to just assure you that, number one, I really greatly appreciate you taking the time, because before I got on the city council, I went through a couple of contracts myself as a community member, and I can tell you, you aren't familiar with labor law. And if you're not familiar with how contracts are put together, it is a very, very, very confusing process. And I agree with you that it was put together that way on purpose, but it wasn't put together that way by this city council. So we are committed to working with you and every community member that wants to make changes. And I want to say that the contract is only one piece of what's broken, and the contract is broken. But it's only one piece. There's so many other things that we must do to ensure that we have the kind of police force that we want. And so while the contract is important, it's just one piece of the bigger picture. And so I hope you will stay tuned to the work that we're doing around police accountability. I hope you will stay tuned to the work that we're doing around re-envisioning what community safety looks like. This extension does not mean everybody stops work for a year and then comes back a year later and starts over again. What it means is we will have the time to do it right and to do it thoughtfully. Otherwise, we would have ended up with the exact contract that we already had, and that was not an option either. And so I understand that this is a very complicated process. Trust me, I still have to rely on the experts to sometimes explain different parts of it. So thank you for your advocacy, and thank you for actually putting in the time and energy to try to understand this problem.
Right on, great. Thank you, Carla.
The last one I show is Jan E. Friedman.
Very good, welcome.
And commissioners did you hear me? Mayor Wheeler,
yep.
And commissioners,
yep.
And those who are listening, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this important topic of whether or not to authorize an extension of the one-year collective bargaining agreement between the City of Portland and Portland Police Association. Again, I'm an attorney with Disability Rights Oregon, and Disability Rights Oregon is the nonprofit law agency that provides protection and advocacy for people with disabilities in the state. We've been involved in police reform with the Portland Police Bureau for the past several decades, including recently being on the Behavioral Health Unit Advisory Board, a member since its inception, as well as being a member of the AMICUS group, the Mental Health Alliance. Disability Rights Oregon is strongly in support of major expansion of the Portland Street Response. This should allow more appropriate and effective services and response to people who are houseless and or in mental health crisis. There has been some improvement in accountability and oversight of the Portland Police Bureau over the decades of our involvement, including one, the Behavioral Health Unit was created, two, the crisis intervention team training has become mandatory with optional enhanced crisis intervention team training. And three, the USDOJ and settlement agreement terms include community engagement as a requirement, and which of course now is the piece up. The strength of Portland Police Bureau's accountability and oversight is limited by its weakest link, which maybe is the collective bargaining agreement between the police and City of Portland. If this agreement fails to hold officers accountable for killing citizens, then this exacerbates the distrust and anger of the community members. Reasonable oversight and accountability requires that investigations of Portland Police Bureau officers who have been charged with wrongdoing are done independently, that they're meaningful, including compelling officers to testify, and that they result in permanent terminations where warranted. In terms of the PPA's collective bargaining contract, there needs to be transparency for the citizens of Portland. The citizens of Portland are the experts on whether or not the Portland Police Bureau is doing its job. The public should be given notice of what's happening and be provided a way to be heard. In the disability community, there's a phrase that you've probably all heard, nothing about us without us. This is appropriate here, where the people served are the community members. The city of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau have been part of a lawsuit and settlement agreement with the USDOJ for many years. A USDOJ finding is that the Portland Police Bureau used unconstitutionally excessive force on citizens of Portland with or perceived with mental illness. Change by the Portland Police Bureau, including all PPA negotiations, must require officer accountability and transparency.
That's
without this in the PPA contract, all of PPB accountability and oversight is diminished. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. And Carla, that completes our public testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mayor.
All right. Any further discussion on item 514 before we call the roll on that? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll on item 514. That is an emergency ordinance.
Hardesty?
First, I want to thank all the people who came to testify today and all the ones that I know who would have wanted to testify on this issue. I want to start by saying that I support this extension because to me, the most important part of this process is that it be as transparent as possible. Many of you may remember that I decided to run for city council during the last contract talks, when the public was shut out of City Hall. The last contract was bargained behind closed doors without community process. As a city commissioner, I am committed to making sure that doesn't happen again. It is also why I have advocated that the city hire an outside attorney and have had one of my staff members included on the city's bargaining team. I am committed to the community's participation in these negotiations. As our legal counsel mentioned, we begin bargaining with PPA on February 7th, 2020. The Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act requires that parties bargain for at least 150 days. And our 150-day timeline would have expired on July 6, 2020. After being in negotiations for 150 days, either side can demand to go to mediation, which is a confidential process. This would mean that sessions would no longer be open to the public. For this reason alone, I would support an extension, which gets us back to the table in January of 2021, when hopefully we will be able to be in a room together in some capacity. This is important because as part of our ground rules, bargaining sessions have been agreed to not be recorded, which could make using technologies like Zoom difficult. And you can read the ground rules at beta.portland.gov/sites/default-files-2020. And it's also on my Facebook, my commissioner Facebook page. These same ground rules will be in effect in January. This extension sets 6 dates for negotiation, and the first one will be hosted by the city. The city and PPA alternate hosting each session, with city sessions being open to the public. We cannot mandate PPA sessions be open to the public. Most importantly to me, the agreement allows the Portland Street Response Pilot Program to move forward with an expanded 6 teams. My office has gotten several emails asking why this is part of the negotiation. And I'd actually like legal counsel to provide an explanation because, Heidi, I don't want to mess it up. So if it's okay with the mayor, I'd like to have Heidi respond to why we needed to have this as part of the PPA negotiation.
Without objection.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, Council. Heidi Brown from the City Attorney's Office. And Commissioner, in answer to your question and the question from some members of the public about why is Portland Street Response referenced, the work of responding to these types of calls has been historically done by police and fire, depending on the nature of the call. And because of that, there is a strong argument, without saying whether it's 100% accurate or not, but there's a very strong argument that this then is bargaining unit work for those groups that are responding to the calls. In other words, police, when they respond, it becomes bargaining unit work, arguably, after many years of responding in that manner, and similarly with fire. Therefore, we sat down with both the fire union and the police union to get agreement on this pilot program to move it forward. And we started off, as noted, with one team and then expanded it to six teams and citywide for the pilot program.
Thank you, Heidi. I appreciate that. I know many of you are interested in these negotiations, and I'm excited to work with you and our community as we enter this process. Earlier this year, the mayor and I hosted two community listening sessions with a report produced by the Bureau of Human Resources. You can see a link to those results on my commissioner Facebook page. We also hosted a work session on police contracts with presenters DeRay McKesson and Sam Singyangwe of Campaign Zero, and a link to that work session is also in the same post. As a city commissioner, please understand that my role is different than yours. I am both committed to change and am an employer, and now find myself in the role of the employer as well. This means that in addition to change, I also am committed to not violating any laws under the Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act that could be viewed as an unfair labor practice. In addition to issues of justice, labor relations is a complicated legal process, and I will do everything I can to help provide transparency and education as we move forward. I just want to end by saying we have work to do, but I am 100% committed to making sure that the next police contract will more clearly reflect the values of the community that is that the police are sworn to protect and serve. And I absolutely believe that we will be in a much better position based on legislative actions and other actions the mayor and the rest of the city council will take between now and January of next year. And so I vote yes.
Hugh Daly.
Well, the mayor and Commissioner Hardesty already covered a lot of what I had to say about extending this agreement, which basically will preserve the existing ground rules and restart the bargaining timeframe in January of 2021. Past councils have bargained away a lot of our power, and the union is not going to give up that power easily. So I agree that we need to extend this bargaining agreement in order to guarantee the transparent process and community involvement that we've already committed to incorporate reforms coming from the state, as well as demands from the community. And I want to thank community members who gave testimony today, those who continue to email our offices, and those who are still out there after more than 30 days protesting in the streets. I hear you, I stand with you, I share your frustrations. I'm deeply concerned by the ongoing reports of police violence against protesters, and I'm committed to getting what we want and need out of this process. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for your leadership and for explaining very clearly why we are making this decision together. Thank you for acknowledging the difference between being a community advocate and a city commissioner. And I feel so blessed to have a community advocate and a city commissioner who's able to lead this work with such dignity, thought, careful evaluation, and frankly, just cred. You got the cred. And it's good to see that. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for your partnership in this. And of course, Kathy Bless in the City Attorney's Office for your work on it. And thanks to everybody who's been emailing and calling our offices. I'm sure Commissioner Hardesty, you will post your comments and rationale on your website, and I will link to that, as I have linked to your previous statements on the budget and at other times, because I want people to really listen to what you're saying, because to me, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And to those who are saying that we can just fix everything by going to the ballot to pass something to change the charter, it doesn't work that way. This is the very, almost the epitome of systemic racism, of institutional racism. We changed the charter in 2012 to acknowledge that there are actually 52 weeks in a year, and therefore there are 26 paychecks rather than 27. And we changed that. It was overwhelmingly accepted by the voters that yes, indeed, there are 52 weeks in a year. And the police union, the police officers union, and the firefighters union appealed it, and it was overturned in arbitration. So that just shows how difficult, how preeminent contract law and property law, and who owns this country, who has owned this country for centuries. And so we're not going to be able to change that. And we may not be able to change it by force either, by violence in the streets or by the ballot measure. What we're going to have to do under Commissioner Hardesty and Mayor Wheeler's leadership is to change hearts and minds and to negotiate a contract which is actually in the better interest of the officers as well as the public. They're not doing them, the contract at this point is not doing them any favors, and some of the elements in it about not being able to embarrass officers by saying who has been responsible for various things that have been found wrong. That's not how it works for the people who are having their mugshots posted, and that's not how it works for people who are found to have done wrong in the criminal justice system. So it's complicated, as folks better than I have said. And so we've got four people committed to this process right now, and we've got a community that is paying attention, that is wanting to see changes, and we have to be really careful in how we go about making those changes so that they stick. Because the last thing we want to do is to get something that we think is going to solve the problem and then it doesn't. And that means you take the time. And as we've learned from the Indigenous peoples, it's worth taking the time, as we learned from the youth last night in the climate change resolution. It's worth taking the time and doing things carefully and doing things with community participation. And that's why we're extending this contract. And that's why we're not just letting it expire, because then we lose so many of the things that, of the values that we want to pursue. So thank you, and I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you for that, Commissioner Fritz, because it dovetails nicely with what I wanted to say. I remember when we delayed the vote on the climate declaration, how much grief we collectively got from the community. And I remember some very heated, pointed political speeches telling us that we were delaying, that it was important that we act immediately, that we were not doing the responsible thing by acting quickly. Well, we took the time, we slowed down so that we could engage BIPOC communities, so that we can engage those who are most impacted by climate change, so that we could elevate the voices of those who don't always have their voices elevated in the heat of the moment. And we heard last night uniformly from people how much they appreciated that we took the time to do it right, to elevate the appropriate voices, and to get the frame around justice that we ultimately ended up with. In other words, that original blowback that we received basically dissipated as people understood what it was we were trying to do and when they saw the results of what we wanted to get done. The same thing held true when we delayed the allocation of the 2016 housing bond dollars. We slowed that process down so that we could engage communities of color and community organizations that had better access to frontline communities than we did. And again, we took a lot of crap from a lot of people for slowing that down for a couple of months. But in retrospect, once again, people realized that that was the right thing to do and that it actually turned out to be smart. And oh, by the way, we're actually way ahead of the timeline that we'd originally stipulated for the Portland Housing Bond. So slowing down didn't hurt us, it helped us. This is another example where today we're hearing some pointed speeches, people telling us we're making a mistake by not charging forward come hell or high water, regardless of the fact that we all as a council acknowledge we cannot do the kind of public engagement process that we already promised the public. And I believe this will turn out to be the same as with the climate declaration and the housing bond, that this will turn out to be the right move to make. I'm glad that my colleagues are standing strongly with me on this issue. It is the right thing to do, and I appreciate it. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 515, please.
Hardesty.
I am thrilled to be able to support the hardworking employees of BOAC today with this new contract. I know that it was one of the hardest votes I ever took when this contract first came in front of us to vote no on it, but it was absolutely the right thing to do at that time. I want to share my great appreciation to the labor negotiating team for coming back to the table and helping the city achieve its goal around making sure that we had concessions from all our unions. I am proud of the work that BOAC does every single day under some really trying circumstances. And Bob Casa, I just want to say once again that I just think you are an awesome director, and we are very lucky to have you leading that incredible team that you have at BOAC. I am very honored to vote aye.
You, Bailey?
I just want to express my gratitude for all the work that our emergency communications workers do and are doing under these extraordinary circumstances. I want to appreciate the spirit of shared sacrifice shown in this renegotiated contract and extend my thanks to everyone for all their hard work to make it happen. I vote aye.
Fritz.
I was blessed to be the commissioner in charge for 4 years of the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and I was not surprised to hear that many of the employees were concerned about that we were not able to reach agreement when it came to us last time. And it was the frontline workers who pushed to make sure that they did, that the union did come to agreement. And that's what unions are supposed to do, is to respond to the people who are their members. And so thank you, and I vote aye.
Wheeler.
And before I forget, Commissioner Daly, I need you for the council president vote right after this, so don't go away just yet.
Okay.
Well, I just want to thank everybody. I want to thank the bargaining teams for the employees, PPA, Daryl Turner. I want to thank Kathy Bless and her terrific leadership at HR. I want to thank Heidi and her terrific leadership on the legal department. I want to thank all of the council staffs who've been engaged in this conversation. Most of all, I want to thank our frontline employees. They have sacrificed significantly to address the financial repercussions of the COVID crisis. And the sacrifices that they are making, including the freezing of COLA and other steps, they are taking those sacrifices so that the public can continue to receive quality community-based services. And that speaks to the value of our public employees. It speaks to their commitment to the community that they serve. And I want to thank them for that. And I want to thank my council colleagues. I feel like we've worked in a really collaborative way on these issues. These are not simple issues. I think it's fair to say none of us came to our current community leadership positions with extensive labor negotiations experience. We've received good guidance from those in the city staff and legal department and the HR department who are professionals and who have done this work for many years on end. But I'm really pleased with the way my colleagues and my colleagues' staffs have worked in a really collaborative and thoughtful manner to ask the right questions, to get the right information, to give us as principals good guidance, and to help smooth over or navigate any potential differences of agreement that we may have had along the way so that we can get to this important yes vote. And so with that, I'll shut up. I will vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you, everyone.
Excuse me, Mayor, before you move on, if I could give one more thank you. I can't go back to my office if I don't greatly appreciate Carly Edwards, who none of this would have been possible had she not been involved in helping to make work. You say none of us come to this with expertise. There's only one exception to that, and that's Carly Edwards, my chief of staff. And so I just want to appreciate her. It's rare for me to take a moment to appreciate my staff. But again, I think without Carly, it would have been a lot harder for us to have gotten to where we are. So thank you, brilliant Carly Edwards, for your role in getting us here.
Commissioner Hardesty, that was very wise because I just got a text from Carly saying she was locking your office door as we speak. I also want to acknowledge Carly. She's been helpful to you, but on the sly, she's also been very helpful to me. And she brings a lot of experience to the table, and it's been to the benefit of us all. So thank you, Carly, if you're out there somewhere listening and hopefully unlocking Commissioner Hardesty's door. So colleagues, this brings us to a somewhat unprecedented vote. This is ordinarily a very standard thing that we do. Every 6 months, we rotate the council presidency. And there is an order to the way that we rotate the council presidency. We tend to just go in the same order each time. Ordinarily, I would thank the prior council president, Commissioner Hardesty, who has done a really exceptional job serving in the capacity of the council president over the last 6 months. This would ordinarily be Commissioner Udaly's turn to serve as council president. But she has very graciously agreed to cede the presidency to the most senior member of the Portland City Council. That is, of course, Commissioner Fritz. This is her last 6 months after many, many years of service to the Portland City Council and to the city of Portland. We wanted to honor her in some way. And in the absence of a great big bonus check, which we are forbidden to give her for all of her great service, we've decided to honor her collectively by making her the president of the council during her last months of service to the city of Portland. And so with that, I will entertain a motion and a second to accept Commissioner Amanda Fritz as the incoming president of the Portland.
So moved. Second.
Okay. The motion for Commissioner Hardesty, but an equally enthusiastic second to Commissioner Udaly. Any further discussion before we call the roll?
Let me just say, I think it's one of the most brilliant things that we've done in my time on the city council. I am absolutely honored that this was the move that was made. It wasn't what I expected, but I'm thrilled.
Well, it sounds like Commissioner Hardesty's vote is in question. So, Carlo, why don't we go ahead and call the roll and see how this cliffhanger is going to end for us.
Hardesty.
Let me just say that it's going to be really weird to imagine a Portland City Council without Commissioner Amanda Fritz on it. I know we got 6 short months left before that becomes a reality. And I just want to let Commissioner Fritz know that I am absolutely honored to turn the gavel over to her at this time, and I enthusiastically vote yes.
You Daly.
Well, I've mentioned this before, that there is no real onboarding process for incoming commissioners, and there's a lot of assumptions, including that a new commissioner will be intimately familiar with parliamentary procedure, which was not the case for me. And I was made president of the council my first day on the job. And I felt very fortunate to have an expert sitting directly to my left to help me navigate the rather arcane traditions of Robert's rules. I was looking forward to this moment, but when the opportunity arose, I realized I'd be very happy to defer and grant this privilege to Commissioner Fritz. It's also, I think, the right thing to do for me, considering the demands of my job, campaign, and parenting, which at this time I'm one of two people on the planet responsible for my son. And so I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for being willing to accept this responsibility on my behalf, and I vote aye.
Carla, could I change the order? I'd like to go next, please.
Sure, Wheeler.
So thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for your graciousness in this regard. I remember that was sort of funny. Literally, it was your first council session. We elected you council president.
Yeah, hilarious.
I think you were wondering, what have we done to you?
I thought I was being hazed.
Yeah, and frankly, I didn't know either. So it was as interesting a question to me as it probably was for you. But I do appreciate your graciousness, and you will be the next in the rotation after Commissioner Fritz. And I thank you for your consideration and your generosity. And I too have to say how much I appreciate the service that I get to do with Commissioner Fritz. And what I really appreciate about Commissioner Fritz is that she is the de facto historian for the Portland City Council. And she remembers a lot of the context of what we are talking about on any given day. And that institutional knowledge is critically important. And we will be somewhat hobbled as a new council as we assemble in January without that historical experience. And so I just want to say, Commissioner Fritz, I'm not, this isn't your way out. You still got 6 months of hard work ahead of you. We're going to be relying on you every step of the way, as we always do. But time is drawing short. And that leaves me with some very mixed feelings. On one hand, I will really miss working with you when that 6 months draws to a close. But it's tempered by the excitement I have for your future. And I know you're looking forward to doing all kinds of things that you've been putting off for many years as you've served the community. And that's probably the most important thing. So I'm just really glad that you agreed to accept this, that you will be our council president going into the final stretch of what has been a truly brilliant career. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Carla. If that wasn't a pregnant pause, I don't know what a pregnant pause is. Gosh, this is actually really unexpected. And for those watching, I didn't know about this. In fact, when the mayor made the announcement that we weren't just rotating at the beginning, I was busy texting and saying, what? Commissioner Udaly, that's very gracious of you, and I appreciate it very much. And thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for thinking of this, and Commissioner hardest DPO support. And it does remind me that at the beginning of this year, we made Commissioner Fish the honorary president for the 2 days that he would have been. That was part of the rotation. I'm also glad that we have fixed the rotation problem so that no other first-term commissioner will ever have to do what Commissioner Udaly had to do, which was, I'll tell you, Commissioner, it was worrying at the time. And also, I didn't want to be rude and say that I didn't think you could do it. And it, as it turned out, you could do it. You were really, you were just fine. And so as the mayor said, that being president of the council is largely ceremonial. And it's an honor to be asked to serve for one last time. And I appreciate it very much. And I thank all of my staff over the 11 and a half years, some of whom will be available to continue the legacy, but don't take them yet because we've got stuff to do over 6 months. We've got a lot of things that are on our list. It's a bit shorter than the list that was that we came up with at the beginning of the year because of the constraints of the pandemic. And still, I will appreciate my colleagues working with me to get some final things finished up. And I'm very honored to accept this.
Very good. The motion carries. Congratulations, Commissioner Fritz, and thank you for your continued service. Carla, next up is the regular agenda, item number 516, please. Procurement report.
Accept bid of 2KG Contractors, Inc. for the Delta Park Urban Forestry Maintenance Facility project for $3,554,000.
Voters overwhelmingly approved the parks replacement bond back in 2014. Thanks in no
Looks like the mayor froze.
He froze.
Building, if you've ever seen it, it's an outdated barn-like structure.
Net issues because you continue to freeze.
What happened?
You keep freezing up, so you'll start talking and we don't hear anything you say because you're just a frozen face on the screen.
But I just got a message on I got a note on the screen saying that the internet service is unstable, so I'm wondering if it's a because Commissioner Hardesty, your image was freezing on my screen as well.
Oh wow, okay.
So I'm wondering if we can get tech support.
Well, I'm glad that my image is freezing on the screen for the entire world to see. That must be very attractive. I'll now turn it over to Lester Spittler, and you can see his frozen image on the screen.
Morning, Mayor Wheeler.
Morning.
Morning, City Commissioners. Lester Spittler, for the record, I'm the city's chief procurement officer. The authorizing ordinance for this project was approved by City Council in December 2018. Engineer's estimate at the time was $3,630,000, and then there was a medium level of confidence at that time. We issued the invitation to bid on April 14th, 2020. There was no pre-bid meeting due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We did do a virtual pre-bid meeting that people were able to attend, and bids were due on May 19th, and we received three of them. 2KG Contractors submitted the lowest responsive bid in the amount of $3,564,000, which is about 1.8% under the estimate. The city's 20% aspirational goal for state certified subcontractor utilization applied to the solicitation. 2KG met the goal and is proposing to subcontract out 24% of the project to certified firms. They will be self-performing 62% of the project and will be subcontracting to non-certified firms for 13.75%. The 24% certified utilization is broken down as follows. CatWorks Construction is a disadvantaged and a minority-owned business enterprise. They'll be performing site work. According to the state's website, the ownership is Hispanic and the owner is male. And their subcontract is a little shy of $500,000. And then there's two emerging small businesses that will be performing plumbing and electrical work to round out the total. 2KG has been a prime contractor on two previous projects for parks in the past 5 years. Both were pool renovations.
Sir, are you trying to show us a presentation?
I'm not, no.
Oh, okay. Good. Never mind. Continue.
Sorry about that. So 2KG has had two projects in the past 5 years for parks. Both were pool renovation projects. One was at Grant Pool and the other was at Peninsula Park. The Grant Pool project was about $1.8 million. They achieved 18% certified subcontractor utilization, and 98% of the 18% was performed by minority-owned businesses. The remaining certified work was performed by emerging small businesses. The Peninsula Park was about $3.8 million, and they only achieved 6% subcontractor utilization on that project. All of that certified utilization was performed by minority-owned businesses. And I'll just note that there was only one other subcontractor on that project, and it was a specialty pool contractor, and it was about $1 million. So 2KG performed the rest of that work. Funding for the project is included through a combination of a 2014 Parks Bond and major maintenance funds. 2KG is located in Portland, Oregon. They are not a state certified contractor. They have a current City of Portland business tax registration and are in full compliance with all of our city's contracting requirements. If there are any questions about the procurement process, I'm happy to answer those. The Parks Bureau project manager is also in attendance and happy to answer any specific questions about the project.
Colleagues, any questions for Lester? All right, very good. Hearing none, I will entertain a motion to accept the report.
Move to accept the report.
Anybody want a second? I'll second it. So we have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from the mayor. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
It looks like we may have lost the other two.
What? You're kidding me.
Looks like we don't have Commissioner Hardesty.
Hang on. All right. Let's give her a second to get back. I don't know what's going on with the... am I still frozen?
No.
Huh. Let's give her a minute and see if we can get her to... In fact, I'll just call her and see if I can get her on the phone. Oh, she's logging back on.
Aha, finally, being on the telephone has worked for me.
Yeah, your day finally came.
Hi, Mayor.
Hey, can I just put you on the phone until we figure out the internet deal?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for the report, but did you have any questions for Lester before we call the roll?
I did have a question for Lester.
Go for it. Yep.
My question, Lester, is how many contracts has this particular contractor had in the last 5 years?
They've had two for parks, and they've had a radio site project for the Bureau of Technology Services.
And so are we getting better at our equity goals around ensuring that we're creating opportunities for minority and women-owned contracting subcontractors? Are we getting better or are we getting worse?
So this specific contractor is showing improvement over the years, and so I'd say on this project that they exceeded the goal, and we feel like they've a lot of that goal is met by a disadvantaged and minority-owned business, which we're always happy to see, and the certified utilization is almost twice that of the non-certified subcontractor utilization. So I think. This is an improvement from the previous project, so we're happy to see that.
I'm happy to see improvement as well, but I think we can do better. I think we continue to rely on one segment, other segments that make up our requirements for participation, for utilization of minority and women in emerging small businesses. So I would expect to see a contractor who's had contracts for 5 years be showing real gains, and if we're not actually trying to help them do that, then we're not going to ever reach our goals around who gets the privilege of obtaining contracts with the City of Portland. So this is okay. This is not actually good yet. And I hope that we're tracking every contractor that we have and whether or not they're improving their utilization from all the categories that we're looking for. Because I just think we just keep doing the same thing over and over again and calling it success. And I don't see it that way. So thank you. Thank you for that. But I hope we're going to, I don't know when the audit is coming up. Do you know when the audit is coming up?
Yeah, I believe so. They're in the they have a third party within the office doing some fact checking now, and then they're going to release it to OMF, and then we have an opportunity to write a response, and then it gets published. So it's almost ready.
Well, I'm looking forward to having that deeper conversation. Thank you, and thank you, Mayor, for hooking me in by phone.
Yeah, well, it's like old school, but it seems to work. What you missed was Commissioner Fritz gloating about the fact that finally using the telephone turned out to be the better move today. It's like we elect our council president, it's gone straight to her head. any further? Exactly. Hey, any other questions for Lester? All right, very good. We have a motion. We have a second. No more discussion, it sounds like. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Again, I want to appreciate the work that purchasing is doing to try to radically change how we contract for services with the city of Portland. I'm looking forward to us having a more intentional plan as we move forward. And at this time, I will support this proposal. I vote aye.
Fritz?
Commissioner Fish and I were so honored to work on the Parks Bond and indeed to work with all of the staff who worked on these projects. It's one of the things I'm sad about being home in my last summer is that we won't be doing a lot of the park events and the openings that we had planned before. And I'm also sad that Commissioner Fish won't be there to celebrate with us, except in spirit. And I know he'll be in each one of the parks ongoing. So thank you to Robin Laughlin and the entire team at Parks for the great work on this. Thanks to Lester Spittler for continuing to respond to Commissioner Hardesty and my concerns. And we will continue to make progress. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her leadership on the bond. And of course, our good friend, Commissioner Fish, whose name, by the way, has been evoked, I think, in virtually every single council session since his passing. His spirit is very much here and alive, and his work still continues, and it's before us, and it's tangible. And I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for acknowledging his strong leadership and partnership with her on this. Commissioner Hardesty, I also want to thank you for your questions. The only reason I knew that you were disconnected is when Lester finished his presentation. I was like, where's Commissioner Hardesty to ask Lester his questions? Because you two have this rapport that I've not only gotten used to, I've come to expect it and look forward to it. And so it just wasn't the same without you on the line. So thank you for asking the questions that you do. Lester, thank you for keeping us all honest and working to continue to improve the access to these contracts. And I appreciate the rapport you've built with Commissioner Hardesty, in particular on behalf of the entire council and indeed the entire city, to make sure that we're doing as much as we possibly can to include other communities in these contracts. So thank you for that. This is exciting. I know our employees in the Parks Bureau, in the Forestry Maintenance Department will appreciate it. They probably can save some money in their budget by not buying as many buckets to protect the equipment from rainwater coming through the, quote, roof, unquote. So I'm happy to vote aye, and the report is accepted. Thank you all. We'll now move on to a second reading item, item number 517.
Authorized revenue bonds in an amount sufficient to provide not more than $11 million to finance the integrated tax system project.
Colleagues, this is the second reading of a non-emergency ordinance. We've already heard the presentation. We've already taken public testimony on this item. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
I want to thank Thomas Lanham, and I want to thank all of those who were actively engaged in this conversation. Tom Reinhardt, our Chief Administrative Officer, played a significant role. I also want to thank our colleagues at Multnomah County. This ITS Integrated Tax System project has a significant bearing for them as well. There were some lengthy discussions that needed to take place between the city and the county, and I appreciate the way that this was ultimately resolved to everybody's best interest. I'm happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item is item 518 from the Portland Housing Bureau, also a second reading.
Adopt and authorize submission of the action plan fiscal year 2020-21 for the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnerships, Emergency Solutions Grant, and Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS program to the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Colleagues, last week we had the opportunity to hear a presentation and an opportunity for public testimony on this item. This is the second reading. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Our last item for this morning is item 519 from the Office of Community and Civic Life.
Increase fee schedule for the Office of Community and Civic Life noise program for noise variance applications in the amount of 5% as permitted by Code Section 18.14.020B.
Colleagues, this is also a second reading. We've already taken testimony. We've heard a presentation. Any further discussion on this particular item? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty. Did she say something?
She said aye, and then the phone line disconnected, if you can believe that. But I will call her right back.
Thanks, I thought you hung up on me.
No, I didn't hang up on you. You did. Can you vote again? They didn't hear it.
Yes, aye.
Good, thanks.
Thank you. Fritz.
This has been a very unexpected council meeting one way and another. Thanks to Catherine Couch and all of the work of the noise office. I do hope next year that you'll remember that we do need to increase the fees over time so that people who want to make noise are paying the true cost of the analysis of whether they should be allowed to. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. And I want to thank Commissioner Udaly and her team and all the folks at the Office of Community and Civic Life for working on this important issue. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Colleagues, before we close out, I just need to provide an update on the residential infill project. We'd originally scheduled the vote on amendments on July 1st at 2 p.m. this afternoon. Due to the absence of Commissioner Udaly, we're going to continue the item until July 9th at 2 p.m. We will vote on the proposed amendments then. To the members of the public who are planning on tuning in to the council's deliberations, please join us on July 9th at 2 p.m. And I made that announcement up front, but I wanted to make it at the end. And thank you all, folks. We are adjourned.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.